Live Creative Now, episode 54.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. In my last episode, episode 53, I answered a question that I got from somebody on Twitter about how to stay enthusiastic about finishing a creative project when you're at home with interrupting kids all day. If you are a parent, you might want to check it out. The person who asked the question got a lot of good out of my response. So check that out over at livecreativenow.com/053. In today's episode, episode 54, I want to talk about one of the biggest reasons that I hear for why creative play doesn't have a bigger place in people's lives. Creative play, creative expression, creativity in general, why it doesn't have a bigger place in people's lives. And that can be boiled down to three words. This is the reason that I hear over and over and over again, what's the point? In other words, I'm never going to be a master at this. I'm never going to be as good as so-and-so. I'm never going to be able to make a living from it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, ad nauseum. And the conclusion drawn from all of those statements, whether they're true or not, and they might be true. Maybe you won't ever be a master. Maybe you won't ever be as good as so-and-so. Maybe you won't make a living from it. The conclusion that people draw from that too often is, so why even bother? And I wrote a blog post about this back in 2012, which I republished last year, and I've left a link to that post in the show notes. But it's an issue that can never get too much attention, as far as I'm concerned. So that's what we're talking about today. The gremlin that I refer to as the why do I even bother gremlin. My answer to the question, what's the point, or why do I even bother, involves a trip to the San Francisco Library, Baryshnikov, spinner dolphins, and even a little bit of evolutionary theorizing. So, let's get to it. Live creative now. Many years ago, when I was still a fairly new calligrapher, I went with a group of people from the calligraphy guild that I belong to down in the South Bay of the San Francisco Bay Area called Pacific Scribes. A bunch of us took a field trip to the San Francisco Public Library. And the reason why we went to the library is because there is a special collection inside the library that was donated to the library by a man named Richard Harrison, who was a local calligrapher. And he collected a ton of calligraphy, broadsides and books and manuscripts and prints and drawings and sketches and all kinds of things. Nearly 1,000 examples of modern calligraphy. He donated the collection to the library in 1963. And so now anybody can visit the special collections on the sixth floor. And there's a room at the back of the sixth floor called Special Collections. And you can see and even hold in your hands handmade masterpieces by famous calligraphers from all around the world. Now, maybe they're not famous outside of the realm of calligraphy, some of them, but if you are a calligrapher, these are you know, kind of our gods and heroes and demigods. So if you are ever in San Francisco, I highly recommend a visit. The librarian there is named Andrea Grimes. Tell her that I sent you and ask her to see maybe a book by Thomas Ingmeyer, and shoot me an email if you want some other suggestions for what to see, or just ask her for some classic examples of calligraphy, and she will bring them out to you. It is really amazing. So I went up there to, I'd been to the Special Collections before, but I went up there with this group of people from the Pacific Scribes, and we had a special room set aside for us where we could sit at little tables and chairs, and the librarian brought out all of these amazing pieces, and somebody was carrying them around so that we could look at them up close. And it was really hard not to drool. We had to be very careful not to drool on the art because it is just so exquisite. And you could just hear the room oohing and aahing and sighing. And I remember really clearly that one woman sighed and said, "Ah, why do I even bother? I've been doing calligraphy for 15 years and I'll never be even close to this good." And the whole room kind of, you know, laughed and, you know, agreed, and, you know, heads were bobbing up and down, nodding, and everybody kind of had that same feeling. And I will never forget the response of the person who was carrying the pieces around the room for us to see. Now, she was a well-known calligrapher in her own right, named Annie Sicali, and Pacifica Scribes had flown her out from across the country to teach for the weekend for us, because she doesn't live in the Bay Area. And she was just as awestruck by the art that we were looking at as the rest of us were. But without skipping a beat, she said, "Why bother? Because you love it. Hey, I know I'll never dance like Baryshnikov, but it's still fun to wriggle around on a dance floor." Amen. Amen. It's still fun to wiggle around on a dance floor. The funny thing is, when I was a dancer, man, you know, I knew I was never going to dance like Baryshnikov, and it just like ripped me up inside. It made my life so miserable because I was constantly comparing myself. And here's the thing. The "why do I even bother" gremlin is a product of the comparison trap. And it fools us into believing that it's rational thinking, because it sounds so rational. I'll never be good as so-and-so. I'll never be as good as Baryshnikov. So what's the point, right? That sounds so rational. But this gremlin is based in deception, not in rationality. Because here's the thing. The point is not to be as good as Baryshnikov. The point is that it's fun. The point is that it gives you joy. The point is that it makes you feel alive. This is such an important thing. I cannot impress this on you enough. The "why do I even bother" gremlin tries to convince you that this is not enough, that somehow you have to achieve some level of greatness, that you have to perform and impress other people, maybe compete with other people and win, in order for a pursuit to be worthy. And that is a lie, and it is a dangerous lie. We live in a very achievement-oriented culture, a very competition-oriented culture. So it's not surprising that the "why do I even bother" gremlin is around, because it's got a lot of ammunition at its disposal. But ask yourself, really ask yourself, truly, why should there have to be any point besides because it's fun? Why should there have to be any other point besides because it's fun? Now, here's where the dolphins come in. In 2003, I went on a spiritual adventure tour to Hawaii, the Big Island, to swim with wild dolphins. And it was an amazing trip. I got to swim with a lot of wild dolphins. And you never know if they're going to show up, but they showed up. It was really incredible. But I'm not going to talk about swimming with the dolphins right now so much as something that I remember one of the tour leaders talking to us about. She had spent a lot of time with dolphins and with dolphin researchers, and she told us a story of a research study that I don't remember who the group was who commissioned this study and did this study, but they wanted to find out once and for all why spinner dolphins do their spinning and leaping behavior. Spinner dolphins are the ones who very frequently they spin out of the water, they leap up and spin and splash back down in the water. So the scientists wanted to find out, why do they do this? And the tour leader who was telling us about this research told us that they spent, I don't know, some really long time, several months, it might have even been years, I can't remember, and some like huge amount of money. I don't remember the exact amount. And the formal answer that they came up with at the end of the study as to why spinner dolphins spin was, quote, because they can and it's fun, unquote. Love that. Now, I did do a Google search to see if, you know, I just heard this from this tour leader, so I don't know if, I don't know how, you know, I wanted to verify if that was accurate or not. And I couldn't find an accuracy on that claim that I couldn't find the specific research. And a lot of scientists say that spinner dolphins spin to remove sucker fish that are stuck to them. And apparently dolphins do use spinning behavior for this purpose. But here's the thing, dolphins without sucker fish also spin. So they're not just spinning to get rid of suckerfish. And the question that I think it's really important for us to ask is, why shouldn't, because they can and it's fun, why shouldn't that be a good enough reason to do something? Why shouldn't it? If you think about it, I mean, if you look at, you could look at a dog or a cat playing or any animal playing, you know, and you can come up with all kinds of reasons why, oh, they're practicing adult behavior. That may very well be true. But it's humans who need to find some purpose in everything. Animals aren't thinking about purpose. They're doing things instinctually, or they're doing things out of fear or because it feels good, because it's fun. But we have to find some important purpose in everything. And if you think about it, it's not such a big surprise that we find it really hard to allow ourselves to pursue a creative pastime or a new creative skill or something just for the fun of it. Because we can't even seem to let animals do something just for the fun of it. There always has to be some biological, evolutionary purpose, according to the scientists. So I'm gonna add a little argument from the human perspective. Maybe there is a biological evolutionary purpose for everything we do. And maybe the biological evolutionary purpose for creative play is that more joyful beings live better quality lives. And they're probably likely to live longer if they're joyful, right? Not to mention that more joyful beings are a lot more likely to get along better with other beings. I talk about this a lot, about why creative play is world-changing. One of the first reasons that I give is that when you do your creative thing, it changes your mood. It improves your mood. And it makes you feel more alive. So you bring that with you everywhere you go. So when you're at the grocery store and somebody in front of you is being really annoying, you're much more likely to be able to laugh it off or just let it slide off of you, not get irritated by it. Whereas if you are not well-nourished and fed, you haven't been doing your creative thing, you've been starving yourself, then you're going to be cranky and irritable. And when that same thing happens in the grocery store, you are a lot more likely to snap at the person or to react in a way that's going to escalate things, et cetera, right? If you think about a group of beings, a group, let's talk about a group of humans. If they are, as a whole, more joyful, they're probably going to get along a lot better with other humans, which would make that group more likely to be able to survive as a community because they're getting along. So if you want an evolutionary biological purpose, I think that serves pretty well. However, I think that the fact that joyful beings will simply enjoy their lives, however long or short they are, I think that's reason enough. It is enough for me. And I tell you, it has changed my life so dramatically to give myself that space and time, even if it's only 15 minutes, giving myself that space and time for creative play has really turned my life from gray to full color. And I hear over and over again from people who've gone through my programs and my Creative Sandbox members how much better their lives are now, thanks to, you know, the precepts that they've learned from me and practiced inside the Creative Sandbox. So it's enough for me, and I'm really curious. I'd love to hear from you. Is that enough for you? Because you can, and it's fun. Is that enough? And if it's not enough, I would really love to hear why. So that's it. That's a wrap. If you have a topic or a question that you would love to hear me tackle in a future episode, I would love to hear it. You can hop on over to livecreativenow.com/questions and leave your question there. And if you haven't already left a rating and review over on iTunes, I would be so appreciative if you would do so. Here is what Jessicris wrote as her review. I think it's a her. Just what the creative doctor ordered. 5 stars. I found this podcast after desperately typing creativity into the search bar on iTunes. I'd been listening to a few other podcasts that sort of tangentially cover creativity, but that were long on inspiration and short on practical advice. Melissa delivers both in a way that is refreshingly honest and relatable. I was not familiar with Melissa or her work before listening. I chose at random to listen to the morning routine episode first, and I loved it so much that I've been binge listening the last few days at work and during my commute. Melissa's lessons and advice are applicable no matter where you are on the creative journey. I'm so glad I found this podcast. It's one of those happy accidents that I feel will be truly life-changing. Thank you, Jessicris. I especially love that you were binge listening. I totally love that. Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and go get creating. Mwah! Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.